Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, a federal judge has cleared the way for the demolition of the historic Skinner's Falls Bridge, starting today. We'll speak to Damascus Citizens for Sustainability about their 11th hour appeal, which failed to stop the removal of the bridge. A new supermarket in Ellenville opening right in the same spot where the old market used to be. We'll speak to the president of the Tops Friendly Markets about what their plans are. At Ease at Lackawack Sanctuary, a nature-based program offering a healing path for veterans. And it's ramps season. We'll learn all about it coming up. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Italian Prime Minister Giorgio Meloni will be meeting President Trump at the White House today. Their visit will be the first time Trump's met with a European leader since he announced tariffs on European imports. NPR's Deepa Shivaram reports.
Tariffs are expected to be a main part of the conversation between Meloni and Trump, who have an amicable relationship. Meloni, head of the right-wing Brothers of Italy party, was the only leader to attend Trump's inauguration this year. But relations with Europe have been tense after Trump announced 20% tariffs on European imports, which he then reduced to 10% to allow for negotiations to take place. Meloni last visited Trump at his Florida home in January, and she's set to host Vice President J.D. Vance in Italy in the coming days. Deepa Shivaram, NPR News, the White House.
U.S. District Judge James Boasberg says the Trump administration is likely in criminal contempt. The judge says the administration has purposely ignored his order to turn around planes deporting migrants to El Salvador last month. Medications known as GLP-1 have revolutionized the way that doctors treat weight loss. That started largely with Ozempic. It's Novo Nordisk's blockbuster diabetes drug. But most of the current options on the market are injectables. These can be intimidating for patients to use. NPR's Sydney Lepkin reports a new GLP-1 pill is now on the horizon.
Eli Lilly is announcing that early results from a phase 3 clinical trial of its GLP-1 pill show it reduced participants' A1C, a measure of blood sugar control, better than placebo. The trial lasted 40 weeks and was only for people with type 2 diabetes. According to the company, the safety and efficacy was consistent with its injectable GLP-1 drugs, Zepbound and Mounjaro. The once-daily pill also helped patients lose up to 16 pounds. The company plans to report the results at the American Diabetes Association conference and publish them in a peer-reviewed medical journal later this year. Sydney Lupkin, NPR News.
Stocks opened mixed this morning as President Trump attacked the Federal Reserve for not lowering interest rates. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell more than 400 points in early trading.
The European Central Bank lowered interest rates today, and President Trump would like the Federal Reserve to take similar action. Of course, political leaders in Europe have not launched a trade war, which threatens to raise prices for their citizens. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell warned in a speech this week that Trump's new tariffs are highly likely to generate at least a temporary rise in inflation. That's discouraging the Fed from cutting interest rates any further. This is not the first time Trump has criticized the Fed for keeping borrowing costs elevated. He says Powell's termination, quote, cannot come fast enough. Powell has insisted he plans to serve out his term as Fed chairman, which runs through next spring. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now down 424 points. The Nasdaq is up about 30 points. This is NPR. U.S. Senator Patty Murray of Washington State says that Head Start centers across the country have not been able to get $1 billion in federal funding they're owed. The Democratic senator says some Head Start preschool classrooms are now closed. Murray charges the Trump administration is slow-walking the money. Head Start is a child development program for the nation's poorest children. Research has shown that in many age groups, men drink more alcohol than women. A new study suggests that in one category of young women aged 18 to 25, women are drinking more like their male peers. NPR's Katie Riddle reports on the study from the Journal of the American Medical Association.
Researchers define binge drinking as 5 drinks in one occasion for men and 4 for women. Bryant Shuey is a professor of medicine at University of Pittsburgh and one of the authors of this study.
We're seeing the gap in binge drinking between females narrowing across all adults, with young adult females binge drinking at a higher rate than their male counterparts for the first time.
Roughly 31% of young women indicated binge drinking in the last month compared to 30% of males. Shuey points out that overall, younger people have been drinking less in recent years. This study just shows that younger men and women have similar drinking patterns. Katie Riddle, NPR News.
Two New York corrections officers have pleaded not guilty to murder charges. It's in connection with the beating death of a prisoner last month. This happened while some New York State prison guards were staging an unapproved strike. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News, from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Lilly Endowment, a private foundation supporting NPR's coverage of religion and spirituality, and Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. A federal judge has cleared the way for the demolition of the historic Skinner's Falls Bridge starting today. We'll get an update on that. But first, last August, the ShopRite supermarket in Ellenville, New York, closed after 30 years. The store had been the only major grocer in the village. Now, Tops Friendly Markets will be opening a new store at that site of the former ShopRite location in Ellenville this summer, scheduled for mid-June, following a $2 million floor-to-ceiling renovation. Joining us now with more is Ron Ferry, president of Tops Friendly Markets. Mr. Ferry, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for being here. What can you tell us about the new Ellenville location and why you chose it?
Yeah, so Tim, again, thanks again for giving us the opportunity to talk about our new store. But we are super, super excited about Tops coming to Ellenville and being able to bring back a traditional full-service supermarket to the residents of the community there. You know, we know how important it is to have a local full-service supermarket in the community. And this location, you know, opened up to us. It's certainly an opportunity for us to continue to grow our footprint in New York State. In New York, it's very difficult to build ground-up supermarket locations, and we've grown over the years through acquisitions of family-owned business and some smaller supermarket chains over the years. It's just, you know, there's a lot of saturation in the market overall. But this Ellenville location was a perfect fit for us, and we feel that we're going to be able to serve the community, and they're going to be super excited with what they see when the store opens in June.
Yeah, you're based in New York in Williamsville, and Tops Markets operates a network of 152 stores across New York, Pennsylvania, and Vermont. And as you said, you're renovating this space because of, I guess, all the regulations and things that have to do with building in New York. It's probably more efficient for you to go into the existing space. But you're putting about $2 million into that. What can folks expect with these upgrades?
Sure. Really floor-to-ceiling remodel. So we're going to have a brand-new storefront, new road signage that will be in the store, a whole new decor package throughout the store, completely converting all the lighting, both exterior and interior, to LED, a new flooring throughout the whole store, restrooms completely remodeled, new brand-new checkouts in the stores. We're also going to be introducing self-checkouts to the store. I know previously they did not have that availability, so we'll have self-checkouts there as well. We also are going to offer Instacart, so customers can certainly, if they choose to order from home and utilizing our Instacart app, they can certainly do that and either have it delivered to their homes or do in-store pickup as well. We'll have a full floral department. In our deli department, we're going to be having the Boar's Head brand in our delis. I know that's very popular in the area. We're also going to have in-store sushi. We're going to have made-to-order subs for customers as well, too. And our bakery, one of the things we're really excited about is we're going to have in-store fried donuts. And most stores today they just don't have in-store fried donuts. They're frozen donuts, and if you taste a fresh fried donut, There is a significant difference. So we're really excited about that, and I think customers are going to love them.
I'm going to program my car GPS.
Walk in the stores.
I'm going to program my car GPS to take me directly to the Tops Market now. Fried in-store donuts. Oh, my goodness. So, you know, you've got a lot of things that you're offering for folks there. And in the community, the previous store had been there for 30 years. It definitely becomes a part of the community. The people that work there become the part of the community. Are you hoping to attract some of the folks that work there? Or how many jobs are you creating in this store when you open in mid-June?
Boy, you're so right. That's so important to us to be part of the community. And what we're really excited about is we put out the call for applications, and to date we've had over 300 applications for people wanting to work at the store, but we plan on hiring a little over 100 total associates, 30 plus of those being full-time associates, and to your point, we absolutely are hoping that some of the former employees of the ShopRite are in that applicant group, because obviously if you can get an experienced associate, and certainly if those folks have been out of work since the store closed, it would be fantastic to be able to get them back to work.
Can you share more about how you work with local producers and farmers, particularly in Ulster County?
Sure. We have some stores today in the area in Rhinebeck, New Paltz, LaGrange, Tannersville, in the Hudson Valley and Catskill area. So one producer that we use is Red Barn Produce, which is in Highland, New York. And that's a woman-owned business that we use today in our produce departments. But one of the things that is important to us as an organization to utilize local vendors and partners. And I would put out a call to all the listeners today. If you're a local business, and would encourage all of you to reach out to us as soon as possible if they'd like to discuss adding their brands into our store. A lot of our communities have local vendors that we carry their products in our stores, and we would love to do that here in Ellenville.
You mentioned the, I'm just going to go back to it again, the fried donut section, which would have been enough for me, but you're also having a brew market, gluten-free options, plant-based products, and expanded kosher section. How do you decide what to offer in your new location?
Yeah, so we do extensive market research prior to certainly opening the store, and take a look at what the community makeup is. But more importantly, post the store opening, in this case because of the store being closed, post the store opening, we listen to our customers. And certainly we will pivot very quickly if customers are requesting certain brands, certain products, certain lines of products. So to your point, we felt very strong about making sure we had a kosher representation in the area. Some gluten-free products. We know that's very important to the celiacs that are in the community. And the brew market, again, is something that we do very well as an organization to just offer various beer products that are out there. And a lot of them are, quite frankly, local breweries that we bring in. So you'll see that there are any breweries that are in the area will be part of our brew market in the store.
You know, here in Sullivan County, the local supermarket change underwent an ownership change recently within the last year. There was a little grumbling about the changes. You know, people are used to things being the same. That store, in the ShopRite store, had been there for 30 years. What's the one thing you want the folks in the Ellenville community to know about the new Tops store there and what you're doing there for the community?
Yeah, I truly think when they walk in the door, when we open, that they're going to see a full transformation of the store, and that the products and services that Tops has to offer, I think again the community we're really excited that they're going to be proud of what we put forth in the community, and they're going to be proud of their supermarket. A lot of our communities. consider tops. They'll call it My Tops, and that's our goal here in Ellenville, is for the residents to say, I'm going to My Tops today. So that would be our goal. We offer so many unique services, like you said, the fried donuts, but in-store butchers. I mean, there's not a lot of supermarkets anymore or big chains that offer a butcher in the store. We're going to have in-store butchers, so if customers want to come in and get their custom meats, they're going to be able to do that at our store.
And get to know the butcher, too. It's still planning to open mid-June. Is that still slated for when you're scheduled to open?
It is, sir. Yes.
All right. Ron Ferry, president of Tops Friendly Markets. They're opening their new store at the site of the former ShopRite location in Ellenville, New York, this summer. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome, and thanks again for the opportunity. And to all the residents and listeners out there, we're really excited and looking forward to meeting and seeing you all soon.
All right. You know where to find me. All right. Thank you.
Take care.
Take care. All right. We'll take a break. And when we come back, an update on the demolition of the Skinner's Falls Bridge, a legal effort by Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, failed. We'll talk to the executive director of DCS after this. This is Radio Chatskill.
On Catskill Character this week, Michael Murphy of Bethel, New York is my guest. Please join me, Donna Fellenberg, and Murph, and you'll learn about the drum called the djembe, the rainbow family, and how the Catskills became home for this peripatetic traveler who has visited 49 states in the U.S. That's Catskill Character this Saturday at 10:30 on Radio Catskill.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, it is the history of the most magical, life-changing, world-changing invention already in your home, the refrigerator. And we have both practical and mind-blowing ways to use it. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11, on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. A federal judge has cleared the path for the demolition of the Skinner's Falls Bridge, rejecting a legal effort by Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, who sought to spare the 122-year-old structure from destruction. PennDOT says they will start the removal process today. In a ruling issued Tuesday, Judge Carolyn Michalczyk of the U.S. District Court for the Middle District of Pennsylvania sided with the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, or PennDOT, citing the bridge's deteriorating condition as a significant public safety threat. The historic Baltimore Truss Bridge, opened in 1902, spans the Delaware River, linking the rural communities of Milanville, PA, and Skinner's Falls, New York. It's long served as both a functional crossing and a beloved local landmark, described by Barbara Arundel, director of Damascus Citizens, as, quote, poetry in steel. I spoke with Barbara Arundel yesterday about her reaction to the decision.
Well, very, very upset, but we tried, we put up a good fight, and even the judge said that if it was just a matter of ruling on the merits, we would have won. But there was the additional factor of the PennDOT had three experts testifying that the bridge was essentially falling down while you watch it, and that's really not true. But we couldn't get an expert to testify in this situation. It's very difficult to go up against PennDOT experts. And you know the old story about how if a lawyer has facts, well, they lean on the facts. If a lawyer has laws, then they lean on the laws. And if a lawyer has neither, they bang on the desk. And that's basically what happened.
The PennDOT folks did emphasize the safety risk, as you said, saying the bridge is on the verge of collapse and could endanger lives. They also stated that they explored restoration options, but ultimately concluded the structure couldn't be saved. Do you believe that assessment?
They No. They have neither the in-house techniques or personnel, nor did they hire anyone who has that knowledge to look at the bridge. And they allowed us to see the inspection reports that were used as the basis for certainly, well, one of the experts who never went to the bridge and has no historic bridge experience or knowledge. But we only got a redacted copy of that. And then they laid 2 3-inch binders of materials on us the night before the hearing. What can you do with that, you know? How can you prepare for that? So it was a very, very difficult situation in terms of trying to get an extraordinary relief, really, is what it's described as. And we tried. We did our best. We presented a lot of really good evidence of why they should not continue. Even the within some of the one of the laws, it says that this is in the federal area, that if like the PennDOT owns this bridge and they essentially went for demolition by neglect, which is against the law within these laws. It's laid out exactly like that. Demolition by neglect is not allowed. And that's what they did. There has been really very little of any repairs done on the bridge since 1987. That's a long time. And what was done was not helpful. Some of which was painting over rust, which everyone knows is only going to make things worse. But everything that was wrong with the bridge at this moment is still repairable. But to pull this further along, I don't think we can, because we're just in a situation where we're up against Goliath, and Goliath is storming around and screaming and, "Everybody get from the street, it's going to fall down." No, it's not, but here we are. Plus, the inspector that was supposed to inspect the homes and in the immediate area did some of the inspections but hasn't given the people their reports. So what good is it if you don't have the report before any explosions are done?
Damascus,
so there's lots of stuff.
Yeah, Damascus citizens also raise concern about violations of environmental and historic preservation laws. Do you think those issues were adequately addressed by the court, in your opinion?
No. And that's something that we are going to probably pursue further within some arrangement, we're not quite sure yet how, is to change the rules within PennDOT that they actually have to respond to. Maybe it needs enforcement or things like that, because basically they just didn't do the requested. Even AECOM quite a number of times said this particular bit of work needs to be done within 1 week, 6 weeks, you know, it varied. And PennDOT would come back and say, "Well, we can do it whenever. There's no traffic on the bridge, and we can do it whenever we get to it." And they would never get to it, never. So, you know, that statement that it's not right, it's against the law to go for demolition by neglect, well, that's what they did.
Let's talk about the community. What are you hearing from residents on both sides of the river about this decision and then the ultimate removal of the bridge? Are they feeling this loss deeply?
Yes, very deeply. It's very upsetting. And, you know, the whole thing about mitigation is insane. You know, what PennDOT is saying, well, we'll make the PA pier, the PA abutment, be a viewing platform with a plastic window that shows what it used to look like. What? That's like saying your dear beloved grandma died, so here, you can have a piece of her fingernail. This is insane. It's crazy. It's nuts. Where are people going to park who are going to go there anyway? You know, on people's property? It's just a roadway there. And it's like, it's sickening. It's totally sickening. So we want to see something else happen. I mean, we have itemization by Nathan Hoff, who has historicbridge.org website, that PennDOT has destroyed 205 historic bridges in the last 20 years. This will make the 206th. And it doesn't seem like they're going to even entertain the idea of a replacement, but maybe we should push for that.
Is there a path forward here? Will you consider appealing the decision, or has the focus shifted to broader advocacy now?
Well, the idea of appealing to the Third Circuit Court is not particularly attractive. It's a conservative court, and we have very little chance of success there. So, you know, we should possibly see what other things we can do that might make PennDOT behave differently. And also see if we can get a replacement to happen. Not two-lane 40-ton. Not. That would be totally insane.
You know, in talking to you and others in the course of covering the Skinners Falls Bridge, this seems to highlight a deeper issue about how we handle aging infrastructure that has historic value. What do you think other communities should learn about this case?
Well, in other places like in Indiana, historic bridges are restored, renovated, and maintained. Not like in Pennsylvania, and also also I think Illinois and Wyoming are similarly taking care of these bridges, and you know they have a value that's, yes, it's a crossing from one place to another, but I've been describing this bridge as poetry in steel, and it really is. It's a remarkable human achievement to use the properties of the metals in a very minimalist way that supports tons of weight with very, you know, it's not like, you know, the massive heavy concrete and heavy steel approach. It has a lightness and a beauty that modern bridges do not have. And that has value.
You were quoted in Delaware Currents as saying, quote, "Though we lost the case, we are the winners," end quote. What do you take away from this fight, Barbara?
Well, we used facts. We used approach that looked at the laws and said, okay, this was not followed, that was not followed, and we looked at the data. The data shows that the bridge has not disintegrated in the last 3 years. No change, no change, no change in the measurements that they were taking. No change means there's no emergency.
And before we let you go, how can listeners get involved or support the work Damascus Citizens for Sustainability is doing going forward?
Well, go to our website. There's lots there. You can immediately see the latest postings, and you can put one or two words in that little search box, and things will come up that we have a very deep layer of information, and if you need specifics about something, ask. And we are very responsive. We are helping communities all over different states to fight fracking and to maintain their environmental integrity. So support DCS and help us continue.
Barbara Arendelle, Executive Director of Damascus Citizens for Sustainability. Thank you for joining us and for sharing your insight on what's clearly been an emotional and important fight for the Skinners Falls Bridge. Thank you.
Thank you.
And PennDOT says that the dismantling is beginning today, and the fishing access area and parking lot will be inaccessible for public use during construction. Additionally, construction activities will restrict river use in the vicinity of the bridge. Recreation users are advised to exit the river upstream at Damascus and re-enter downstream at Narrowsburg. More on the precautions at the Skinners Falls Bridge and other updates at PennDOT.pa.gov. We'll take a break, and when we come back, a unique program that is helping veterans stay at ease at the Lackawack Sanctuary, a nature-based program that offers a healing path. This is Radio Chatskill.
This is Ari Shapiro with NPR. If you've been thinking about helping this station with a contribution, but now is not the right time for a financial gift, you can donate a vehicle you don't need. Pickup is free, and it could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Think about it, and thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not, including cars, trucks, boats, RVs, motorcycles, and more. Donate at wjffradio.org.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. In the woods of the Lackawack Sanctuary in Lake Ariel, Pennsylvania, a powerful initiative is giving veterans and their families a place to breathe, reflect, and heal. The At Ease Veterans Program is transforming the way the military community accesses mental health support through nature, creativity, and connection. Joining us now with more is the Lackawack Foundation President, Craig Lukacs. Craig, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. I want to talk a little bit more in depth about the At Ease program, but let's remind folks about your mission there at the Lackawack Sanctuary.
Sure. So our mission is threefold of research, education, and preservation. Research on the environment and the world around us, education for the public and K-12 students on environmental and science topics, and then the preservation of the land around us and some of our historic buildings that we also manage.
And I mentioned this healing path that the At Ease program offers for veterans. What are the core goals of this program, and how do they align with the Lackawack Sanctuary's overall mission?
Sure. So when we first initiated this program, it started with an intern / apprentice that we had that was currently in the military through a special program that they have in their last year of service. And he was just about to retire, and he was working for us. And we started talking about, you know, the needs of veterans and people who are coming out of service and those who are still in service. And long story short, we realized that there was a huge need in Wayne County, Pike County, and northeastern Pennsylvania and the surrounding areas around us for veterans. Most importantly, there's a very alarming statistic out there that Wayne County has, I think, is ranked like fourth in the state for the most number of veteran suicides. Mm-hmm. And that's really alarming. And so we figured we do a lot of programming here at Lackawack to connect people to nature, and there's benefits about connecting to nature and mental health and staying healthy. And we figured it was a win-win situation for us to connect veterans to what we do and what we know best here. And so that's kind of how the program developed. And we feel it fits perfect with our mission, because our idea is to get people out into the wilderness, out into the properties that we manage and own, and to really reconnect and to find peace there, to enjoy nature and to disconnect from the world around them.
How does the program specifically address these mental health challenges that you're mentioning? What's a typical day in the program, and what kinds of experiences or workshops are offered for vets?
Sure. So we offer different types of experiences, if you will. We have meditation and yoga classes that a veteran can or somebody in active military can participate in. We also have initiated something called the Monthly Muster, which is almost a get together on a Saturday morning, second Saturday of every month, where we gather and have a special topic that we discuss with veterans, whether it's about benefits, about mental health, PTSD, every type of topic that you can imagine, well, that may be of interest to them. We also have some monthly walks. They're on the third Saturday of the month. They are warriors on the trail, so they're basically getting veterans out with a staff person to talk about. So there's usually a brief discussion about mental health or some medical topics, and then everyone goes out for a hike at Lackawack, one of our preserves. We're also trying to roll out and participate in the Guitar for Vets program, which is a national organization where vets learn how to play the guitar, but part of the whole process is to learn to be at peace and to bring themselves into some kind of calmness if there's issues that they're relating to in terms of depression, ADHD, you know, PTSD, all that kind of stuff. So those are the programs that we're currently working on now. We're also planning to roll out a gardening slash a growing program. We're getting a partnership with the Lake Ariel Hamlin Rotary Club, who's putting a greenhouse at Lackawack. And the idea, there's a lot of research done about therapy and gardening. And so we're hoping to roll that out once the greenhouse is built and moving forward with that. And so, but also too, I should mention, we're also doing partnerships with other veterans organizations, you know, and their programming too, such as, you know, Camp Freedom up and up by Carbondale, and there's some fishing programs. So the idea is not we're standing alone, but that we're partnering and pushing veterans into areas that they could best benefit from. So those are a few of our programs, and I'm sure there's more to come in the future.
Have you seen noticeable changes, or have you heard from veterans who are participating in the program? What kind of feedback are they giving you?
So far, we've had very positive feedback. The program is still in its infancy. We rolled the program out or developed the program and started fundraising to support the program late last year. And of course, a lot of the programming that we engage veterans in is outdoor based. So, you know, with the winters that we had this winter, I would say this past winter, it wasn't the best ideal time to roll out a new program. So
yeah.
we're kind of gearing up now to do a lot more work. And it was a very soft launch, if in a sense, but for those who have participated, very positive feedback. For those who are in, we have a lot of interest from the vet community and other partners. So we're sure that this is going to blossom once, you know, the weather finally breaks and gets a lot warmer around here.
The program is led by a retired Army veteran. How has that leadership shaped the direction and I guess the authenticity of the program for a vet coming in, knowing that there's a fellow vet there who they can relate with?
Right. I think that's most critical for us, and that's the reason why this program developed. He was really the impetus behind it. He himself has struggled with PTSD and other mental health issues. Being a vet and being deployed multiple times overseas in active duty. So really somebody who has had those experiences, who also has to, you know, daily live with the results of being a vet, somebody who's been in active duty, you know, in active war zones, for example, he really has an insider, you know, view of it than I could do or any of my other staff. Now, my other staff and I can offer the support in terms of being environmental, you know, talking about what happens in the environment, but he has the insider connection to relate to a veteran. And I think that's key. And that's why we actually developed the program. That's why he's great at leading the program, because of his connections and because he understands completely what somebody could be going through.
He's literally been in their boots. It's
exactly a
program open to all veterans, but also current service members and their families. Why was that inclusivity important to the foundation to include everybody?
Because right now, prime example, our director's partner, girlfriend, for example, is actively in the military, and we can't forget about them as well, right? So they also still deal with struggles and being active and you know, being out there and putting themselves in danger and for the country. And so we felt that they also need to have those experiences and those opportunities to decompress, to relax. But also, too, it's very stressful for families, too. You know, military spouses and children have those being away from their loved ones. And so if we can offer some kind of, you know, experience to, you know, to feel at peace against the whole idea of the program, you know, to bring that to them, it's critical. So that's why they've been included as well, too. And hopefully down the road, we're also looking at bringing in, you know, our, you know, firemen and police officers as well, too, to also participate in the program as well. So this process and this program is definitely going to be growing and gradually getting bigger as we move forward with it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the future plans for that. And also, how can veterans or service members or family members get involved? Is there a cost associated with participating?
No. So the great thing is through foundation support and donor support, this program is completely free. All the programs are free of charge to the participants. The idea behind is that we don't want to have any more burden on them. And part of us as being a nonprofit, we feel that we need to give back to the community. So everything is done in gratis thanks to the support of our community and our sponsors and our donors. And definitely anyone who's definitely interested for sure can, you know, find more information out by going to our website. But and also, too, you know, I want to mention one thing that we're also looking for people to volunteer. So we have a lot of veterans that have experience in certain areas and they want to give back, too. So we welcome veterans who want to help the program as well, too. So it's just building a veteran community up is really what it's coming down to in the area. And there's really not much in the area besides some support services here. So we felt that this would be a good way to bring the vet community in our area together.
Yeah, you guys, you know, we've spoken before about the things that you guys do there, specifically around, you know, shaping the next generation of scientists, folks who are concerned about the earth, the research you do, the education, high school summer camp programs. But this program in particular, I just want to ask before we go, Craig, what does it mean to you personally as you lead this foundation and supporting such a meaningful cause for folks?
I think for me personally, it has a bit of personal, you know, attachment, because I think a lot of us that live in the area have had some family member who has been part of the military. You know, my my grandparents, my father, a lot of my family members have served in wars. And while those are many years gone by, they still have that connection and that impact on the family. And I felt, you know, if we could just do a little something that gives back to the community, that's why it's important. And, you know, we know, you know, we do a lot of work with kids and, you know, connecting kids to nature, which is important. But we also need to make sure that everyone, you know, no matter of their age, is connected back to nature and can really enjoy what LACWAC has to offer. So it is a personal connection for me, too, because of family members, but also because of my staff. You know, I have staff that have been veterans or just have left service, and that's important, too, that we can also support them as well.
Craig Lukacs is the president of the LACWAC Sanctuary Foundation in Lake Ariel, Pennsylvania. You can learn more about all the things they do, including this really great program, the At Ease Veterans Program, which gives veterans and their families a place to breathe, reflect, and heal. More information at LACWAC.org. That's LACAWAC.org. Craig, thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We'll take a break and celebrating the bounty of spring with ramps. They're back. We'll learn more after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, our guest is investigative reporter Gianna Taboni. Her book, The Volunteer, examines capital punishment through the unusual story of one death row inmate, a convicted murderer who sought to expedite his own execution. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, we look at what it means to claim the identity of Latino and Latina in 2025. Should Latino be a racial category, or is Latinidad a fiction? And how do we answer these questions when simply existing as a Latino today can make you a target? That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Ramps are the first edible green plant of spring. Also known as wild leeks, they're related to garlic and onions and grow wild in the forests of the Upper Delaware River watershed. They're highly prized by locals and chefs, and they can be used in a variety of dishes to herald the arrival of spring. Stephen Schwartz is with Delaware Valley Ramps, and they're hosting their fourth annual Ramps You Pick. And to help me speak to Stephen about this subject as an expert, I brought in the big guns. It's Rosie Starr from Farm and Country. Hello to you both.
Oh, good morning. Hi, Steve. Can you hear me on the line?
Yes. Hi, Tim. Hi, Rosie. Can you hear me?
Hey, yes.
Okay, Steve, you're up there in Equinox, Pennsylvania. I've talked to you a lot over the years about different things, maple syrup, knotweed, and now that it's springtime, we're going to talk about ramps. And you are the chief forager for the Delaware Valley Ramps. So how's it going up there? We're having erratic weather, late winter weather, and are the ramps ready for picking?
So I always look at maple as the precursor to ramp. When the maple season is over, the ramps start to emerge. This year, I, like many maple syrup producers, found that it was happening late and it was over early. And there was a big gap between the end of maple and the emergence of ramps, mainly due to cold and erratic weather in between. So ramps started to emerge a few weeks ago. They're still tiny. They are maybe 3-4 inches tall. You might find some larger in some sunnier areas. But we really pick them for commercial harvest only when they get to be, 6 to 8 inches tall, and that the bulb starts to swell out into what we call the teardrop stage. Right now, not only are the leaves small, but the bulbs are small. So it doesn't make sense to pick them for commercial use. But Ramps You Pick starts tomorrow, Friday, April 18th, and continues for 4 weeks. And we have people coming in this weekend to enjoy Ramps You Pick.
Well, I believe the sunshine is out now, and it's going to continue throughout the weekend. So I think the ramp gods and goddesses will be with you. I believe this is a family-friendly event. So what can visitors expect this weekend? What else is blooming in the forest? You have a deciduous area there. What can perhaps children learn about what's emerging on the forest floor?
Yeah, everything is shooting up right now. The ramps like to cohabit with maples, which are have finished flowering, so that they'll find maple flowers on the forest floor. But there's also May apples, which grows on the forest floor, and they'll start to emerge, little green umbrellas. And we'll have ferns. The ferns are swelling up. I haven't seen too many emerge, but they should be up anytime soon. And we'll also have trilliums and Jack in the Pulpit and mushrooms happening during the course of the season.
The ferns that you're referring to, are they hay-scented ferns?
Well, the property has a number of different types of ferns. There are ostrich ferns down in the wetter areas, which are what are commonly called fiddlehead ferns. They're large ferns that, when they're just emerging, form little fiddleheads and are delicious to eat. Throughout the forest floor, there are hay-scented ferns and some sensitive ferns and cinnamon ferns. Hay-scented ferns are prolific. We don't necessarily love them because they will crowd out other forest floor species, but they are pretty.
Mm-hmm. I want to clarify with you, the species of ramps that we're speaking of is Allium trichocum. I know there is another one that's more wild. Will you confirm that they are this trichocum species?
Yes, they are Allium trichocum. They're not Burdicki. There are some documented occurrences of Burdicki in the southwestern and western Pennsylvania. We've never found them on our property.
Mm-hmm. I know that folks are really eager for rams. The farm markets have them, but I understand that they come and pick the, because there's a lot of people and a lot of recipes, like culinaries, used for culinary usages, roasting and fermenting. And I believe your website has a lot of recipes. Will you offer all that information for folks?
Yeah, so people that come for ramps you pick, first we learn to identify ramps. Some people have only seen them on a plate, so it's important to make sure that we know what we're looking for. And there are a couple of species that will be emerging at the same time that are not good to eat, like skunk cabbage or false hellebore. And those species, you know, shouldn't eat. False hellebore can be toxic. So we learn to identify, then we learn how to select ramps to dig, and in on our property, our practice, everyone gets keys as to which ramps to dig, and those are ramps that have three leaves, that have that are large, and in general that means ramps that have had the ability to reproduce. So what we're seeking on our property is sustainable harvesting by selecting ramps that have already had a chance to reproduce, and then creating a next generation. And on the property, you'll see multiple generations in any square foot. You'll see first year tiny seedlings. You'll see second, third, fourth year plants. And then by the fifth year, they start to produce seeds. So we encourage people to only pick the ramps that have already matured and had a chance to reproduce. And then we show them how to dig the ramps effectively and how to replant anything that they've accidentally dug while selecting the ramps, and especially the small seedlings. And then we learn how to process them, how to rinse or wash them, store them, pack them. Everyone gets a chance to weigh them. And at the end, everybody gets bites of a few ramp dishes that we prepare and recipes to take home. So I think this year people will be able to enjoy pickled ramps, ramp pesto, and a ramp dip.
I understand that you've been part of a three-year ramps sustainability trial study with Penn State Education. And this year is the culmination of that third year. In July of 2025, they will come and revisit the plots to determine the number of remaining plants that have flowered or senesced. Would you like to comment on that? Because the way you described your, the plants emerging and the size, it matters right now about how they're being harvested.
Right. So in commercial or residential culinary use, everybody uses the leaves or the bulb or both in their use in their dishes. But the one thing they discard is the root plate, the place at the bottom of the bulb where the roots come out. And like many alliums, we know from, you know, anecdotal evidence that if you replant the roots of, say, an onion, you'll get a new plant. So the question was, can you do that with a wild species like ramps? And I applied for a USDA SARE grant in 22. I was awarded it. So in 23, we created six plots with eight treatments per plot of propagules, meaning the root plates, and planted them in 23. In 24, we evaluated, we collected data on what came up and ran some statistics. And this year, we will do the same thing. We will dig up a few specimens and weigh them and measure them to see how they are different from the original plants. And then the project will be over. The data in 24 was very promising. What we found was a little bit of what we expected, that the so we varied the propagules by the number of leaves, the stage of maturity, so early ramps versus late ramps, and the size of the bulb segment that went with the propagule, say a quarter inch versus a half inch.
Okay.
And as we expected, the larger the bulb segment, the more mature the plant, the better the success. For some treatments, we had 100% return, or almost 100% return, from the previous year. For some treatments, especially the early quarter-inch bulb segments, we got some return, but not what we would expect to be successful. We also varied the plots by areas where ramps grow prolifically versus areas that there are really no natural ramps other than ramps that I've thrown in over the years, and found that we were getting more success in the prolific areas. So like most science, we have what we consider successful results that encourage us to go further. And like most science, the challenge, the goal is sometimes not only to answer questions, but to come up with new questions. And this trial has provided us with some new questions that we hope to get funded in the future and extend the trial.
Okay. Well, I wish you success with that. And at this point, I wish you success for the weekend. Could you tell folks your website and how to get tickets for your event that's coming up tomorrow?
Sure. The website is DelawareValleyRamps.com. There will be a link at the top to Eventbrite where tickets are being sold. Probably the tickets for tomorrow are no longer available since we cut off 24 hours in advance, and that allows us to prepare enough food for everybody.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us, and I wish you lots of sunshine and lots of friendly folks on your property in Equinox in Northeast Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Rosie. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Steve. Happy ramping. Is that the phrase?
Yes, we'll
happy
be
picking.
Rampantly ramping.
Ramp it up. Thank you so much, Steve. And thank you to Farm and Country's Rosie Starr. Her show, Farm and Country, is on every Saturday morning at 10. Do you have a preview of this Saturday's show you want to share with folks briefly?
Oh, the National Canoe Safety Patrol is going to be highlighted. It's time to get on the river and start playing in the water, and those folks will keep us safe.
You know it's spring when you can get out on the river and you can go pick some ramps. Farm and Country airs every Saturday at 10. Thank you, Rosie Starr.
Thank you, Tim.
That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder, you can hear all of our locally produced programming like Farm and Country and others at our website, wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy one degree at a time. More information at Sullivan180.org. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
This week in This American Life, Jack's father had been mad, but never like this.
And he said, "I've worked all my life to make sure that when you walk down the street, people say, 'There goes a hit. They're good people.' I don't think anybody has damaged that reputation as much as you have today."
Honor thy father and mother. It's the Ten Commandments this week on This American Life.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
On the next Jazz Night in America, Linda May Han Oh. From meeting her heroes to playing in their bands, all while doing her own thing. Music from Linda's Aventurine Octet. That's next time on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Join me for Jazz Night in America, Sunday at 8, here on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at wjffradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Well, today's forecast much warmer than yesterday. Plentiful sunshine and a high of 53. Some wind gusts up to 20 miles an hour. Clear tonight, a low of 32. And if you're going out to look for ramps tomorrow, intervals of clouds and sunshine in the morning. Maybe a little cloudier in the day, but a high of 66. And warming up to 74 for Saturday. On Point is next. It's 11 o'clock.